Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello everyone, welcome to the new episode of the Roker Report. You're joined by me, Damien, your host. And of course, with me, we've got Tom. How are you doing, Tom?
Not too shabby, mate. How about you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good after yesterday. I'm very, very happy. And yeah. Also, we've got James. James, how's things?
I'm good, mate. Very, very good.
Good, good. What about you, Gav?
Wicked. Class. Choss. Mint. Everything.
Callum. Callum, are you feeling happier, optimistic this week?
I think I'm in love with Victor and Ichibi.
Oh, that's fair enough.
yeah.
Right, yeah, so obviously joining us off the back of a really important result, actually, and a hard-fought victory, I found. There are so many positives to take, I don't know where to start, so I'll probably just leave you with Gav for a minute. It was at the game. Gav, what was that like? How would you describe that match?
Just immense. It's hard to explain, really, because I've not seen us start a home game with so much vigour and just tenacity, and we just wanted we wanted to take it by the scruff of the neck early, and it was the kind of start which I've been expecting for a while, because David Moyes keeps telling us that in his programme notes, in his press conferences and all that, he keeps telling us that the home fans are really important for what they're trying to do going forward. And when I thought about that after reading it the first time, I kind of thought, well, we don't play in a way which ignites the fans. We kind of start slowly. We'll grow into a game. A lot of our goals at the start of the season particularly were late in games. Mm. Whereas at the weekend, we started like a house on fire. Leicester just didn't know how to deal with us. We'd quite clearly done my homework and would seen which players to target, because Danny Simpson just had a nightmare against Anichibi, and from the off, we targeted that left-hand side. Our right-hand side was probably more underexposed, I would say, but the left-hand side of the pitch for Sunderland just took them to bits, and it should come as no surprise, really, that we won the game, because in that first 10-15 minutes, it could have been 5 or 6, really, contrary to what Match of the Day and the Sky highlights showed you. We really were by far the better team. So I thought at half time we could have maybe thrown it, because you get in that position at times with Sunderland, following Sunderland, you just think, well, we've had a lot of chances and we haven't put them away. Defoe missed a really good one with his left foot where he kind of just scuffed it. And I thought at half time, well, we're not going to win this. It just doesn't feel right. I've got the feeling in the pit of my stomach that's not going to go right. And what ended up happening really was quite the opposite. I don't know if you can call it fortunate, because we had injuries, but bringing on the two centre midfield players at half time just totally changed it up, because we had Kirchhoff strolling about the pitch, just running the game. Although he started quite slowly, he grew into it again. He played well. And then Larson just was Seb Larson. You've always got to know with him, he's got a killer pass in his locker, and he was trying to get him behind, trying to put Defoe in behind. Mm. And we just looked a bit more proactive from midfield, and it's the kind of midfield performance I've been asking for ages. I said it a few weeks ago, we haven't seen a good midfield performance yet this season. And for me, that second half was about as good as it gets with Sunderland. So the crowd loved it. Pickford just topped things off with that save at the end, nearly jumping in the south stand. It's starting to feel like we've got a connection again with the players. And to be honest, players like Anichibi and Pickford and and even to a lesser extent, Watmore and Billy Jones, I would never have said at the start of the season that they would be the catalysts for Sunderland turning things around. But there we go, that's the case, you know.
Well, I mean, you say about the midfield and obviously the changes made at half-time. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But what about the decision to go with Pienaar to begin with? Because obviously we weren't very nice about Pienaar last week, as I recall. We were all a bit...
I wasn't either. Yeah. I wasn't either. Even before the game, I was just like, God, why is he playing? Like, because after the way he played at Liverpool, it was pretty apparent that if anybody was deserving of being dropped, it was him. Mm. But then, as I watched the first 10-15 minutes of the game, I kind of realised, yeah, that I can see why he's playing now. Yeah. Leicester just didn't want to get involved in a tackle, which meant that Pienaar was getting all the time in the world to do what he wanted, and that was exactly the type of game that suits him. Last week was a different matter altogether. He wasn't involved because Liverpool had all the ball, and that didn't suit him, so I've kind of got to give props to Moyes for that, because I would have dropped him, you know. But I thought that first half, it was as good as a centre midfield performance from one single player as I've seen in a while, because he wasn't under pressure, you know.
And also we had, with regards to a curious selection thing, I suppose, with John O'Shea's performance at Anfield being so, not exemplary, but certainly what you come to expect from a defender of his experience. I mean, what did you make of Papi Gilabogi and his performance? What about you, Tom? What do you make of that?
I was pleasantly surprised, I think, a nice little turn of phrase to really sum up how well he played. I think the main thing that he's done, certainly against Leicester, he seems to have cut out the rash challenges, not really diving in for the ball. He looked very assured on the ball, and I think Gav was quite right saying that, you know, we didn't really, well, our midfield haven't really been able to take hold of games. I think we were a lot more effective in the middle of the park, because Gilabogi was able to put his foot on the ball, take it out 10 or 15 yards and allow the midfield to move off him at that point. He was that sort of ideal ball-playing defender that we've really cried out for. I feel Kone, and a few people have mentioned this, Kone is very one-footed and maybe he struggles a little bit. He's almost a little bit static at times. Mm. And there was a point where he intercepted the ball, took it up the halfway line, and instead of carrying on, he kind of hesitated and just laid it off. Mm. I think Gilabogi gave us something that... we've seen it in flashes, but he was just so consistent on the weekend with his distribution that it was absolute joy to behold, in all honesty. And like I said, just the amount of other players he brought into the game, whether he was spraying it out wide to Anichebe, whether he was laying it off for Ndong, it didn't matter who it was, he was absolutely superb. And on top of that, he defensively was brilliant as well. I mean, Slimani and Vardy aren't exactly slouches, you know. Slimani's a £28 million striker, and Jamie Vardy scored in 11 consecutive games last year. So to be able to nullify that threat with such ease, in all honesty, Leicester very rarely posed us a problem. I just honestly think that it was a performance of the highest order.
Fair enough. I mean, I think we were definitely full value for the win. You know, we said last week there are points to be had from Leicester, and they've been giving them away. I mean, they've got the worst. I think they've got the worst away record in the Premier League this season. And true to form, you know, they didn't really put up a fight, especially until I thought when Okazaki came on, they looked a lot better. I don't really see why they're not playing him, because while, yeah, Vardy and Mahrez were immense last season, this season they look indifferent and disinterested. They're not closing down. They're not sort of, you know, chasing the ball to get it back and then break. And, you know, I was quite disappointed with Leicester. I thought they were very poor. But in terms of our performance, I thought Gilabogi was excellent. You know, he doesn't track Okazaki's run to the near post. And if we're being harsh, we can say, you know, that you should maybe be a bit tighter and see that run coming. But then again, it's a very good run and it's a great finish as well. So, yeah, but all in all, I think we wanted to see positive changes, and we wanted to see positivity from the off. You know, we want us to, like Gav said, we want to start games quickly rather than letting teams get on top of us early on. You know, we've seen games this season against Hull and West Ham and Bournemouth and Crystal Palace where in the opening stages we've been quite poor, quite sort of late to start, and you know, yesterday was it was completely different. We were on them from the off, and they didn't really have a chance. So yeah, I mean, you can only beat what's in front of you. Like I said, they're not the team they were last season. Their defence are more exposed to attacks without Kante and Drinkwater. Their attackers aren't chasing the ball. There's no one in midfield winning it back. Their goalkeeper looks very shaky. But, you know, you can only beat what's in front of you. So it's a great win, and we're beating the teams around us. So it's fantastic.
Well, we've got... talking just really briefly, I want to go back and touch on Papi Djilobodji, because we've got a question here from Twitter from... I don't know what his name is. Dave, I assume. Yeah, he's asking, what are your thoughts on Papi, a man who collected crisp packet tokens to play football, now transformed into a defender? Now, that I don't know where he's getting that information from, because I just gave it a Google and I can't find anything about it, but that's a bit of a fascinating fact of him, like something really that came out of nowhere. That surprised me a little bit. I wonder how that happened. How did that come about? Why do you need to collect crisp packet tokens to play football?
It's inspirational, is what it is.
It is inspirational. If someone would explain it to me and why that helped him somehow, he couldn't do it without his crisp packet tokens. Good for him, though. Yeah, no.
He does epitomize how well we've played actually in the last few weeks, and just a player who was so out of sorts to come into the team and be look like a man mountain at the back.
Yeah.
But just to touch on Victor Anichibi, has anyone ever seen a player who's had this much impact into a team? I mean, I struggle to remember one. I just think since he's come into the team, we've been transformed. When Victor Anichibi plays well, we play well. We just look a completely different kettle of fish going forward. He's an absolute monster.
I mean, it's interesting to think on that note that we swapped Jermaine Defoe for Jose Altidore and we got Victor Anichibi on a free. And it's like, we complain about our transfer business being mank, but is it really that bad if those sort of players can come out of there?
When Moyes said didn't fit.
Really hope we can keep him fit, because obviously he's had these injury problems in the past and he showed so much promise. But I mean, I genuinely have never seen a striker play for Sunderland play consistently over the last four or five games, just boss defenders. Like,
yeah.
he looked like they weren't even there. He could have had a penalty in the first half, couldn't he? I think it was Morgan was all over him and the referee didn't give it. Mm. And Van Aanholt could have had a penalty in the second half and all.
Well, didn't David Moyes come out this week and say Victor Anichibi's playing like a £20 million striker? And he is, isn't he? I mean, it's...
Yeah, he is.
I see the Drogba thing getting thrown around, and I know people are just pulling the leg of people who get wound up by that kind of thing. But ultimately, he's playing with such a verve and swagger and presence on the pitch that I think Drogba's the only person you can compare him in the last sort of 10 or 15 years. Whether or not he can carry the form on throughout the rest of the season and get enough goals and inspire the team on to stay up is another matter. But ultimately, right now, Victor Anichibi is the form striker in the Premier League. And I know there's a question sort of lingering around there. How long is it going to take for a team to figure out how to deal with Victor Anichibi? And the fact that teams are going to have to figure out how to play with Victor Anichibi is only going to give more chances to Jermaine Defoe and Fabio Baroni when he gets back into the team. So ultimately, even if Anichibi's out of sorts, his mere presence on the pitch is enough to create chances for other people without even being directly involved. So to say that he's a £20 million striker right now is almost an understatement, no honesty.
I think that it comes, well, as I already touched on it, but yeah, it was a very underwhelming signing, wasn't it? I remember when we found out that we had him, and it was everyone was disparate. No one could wrap their head around it. There weren't many arguments going around that were pro in each of me. At all, everyone was really like, "Is this the best we can do?" I'm trying to remember who else was tossed around at the time. The other names that we were looking at, and
Adebayor,
that was one. Yeah. Yeah.
Bentner,
yeah. All the
well, I mean, I remember being very upset that that we had signed. We'd had to sort of go and sign Anichibi after the end of the transfer window, and Leicester had gone out and spent £30 million on Islam Slimani.
Mm.
You know, and you think, oh God, look at that man! Look at what they're spending all this money on a big, strong, goal scoring, you know, attacking player. God, wouldn't you just love to be Leicester? And if you'd looked in that game and said, which of those two big brutes up front is the £30 million player?
Yeah.
It's no contest. It's no contest at all. And it's amazing. I don't think anyone could have expected him to have such a ridiculous impact on this team. It's absolutely insane. But football is insane. So we really shouldn't be surprised. But he's just, I mean, he's unplayable at times. You can't shift him off the ball. It doesn't matter who he's up against. You can't get around him. You can't outmuscle him. He's got decent pace. He's got a good shot on him. He's got good ball control. He can pass the ball. He can knock it past you and cross it. It's literally like you're watching a £30 million player.
Mm.
But we got him for free after the transfer window closed. It's just madness.
It is. That's the only word to describe it is madness or ridiculous. Because, as you mentioned, Slimani, lads, he is awful. I'm sorry, he's absolutely dire. He's not a chance he's a Premier League striker.
He certainly didn't.
Tell us how you really feel, Jim.
Yeah, right. Well, okay, we've said, well, there's quite a few positives there, but moving back to what we were saying about the midfield, obviously Kirchhoff and Larsson coming back, definitely something that we needed, those midfield reinforcements. You can tell that they've been playing together for the under-23s because they didn't seem to have any problems linking up together yesterday. No issues at all. You wouldn't think that they'd been injured. You wouldn't think they left. On that note, we've been asked a question about Kirchhoff, whether or not he'll be given a new contract in January. That's an interesting one. That's an interesting topic for debate, really, because we were talking about how we'd raise funds in January anyway, and Kirchhoff was one of those that was sort of battered around. But obviously, without him signing a new contract, we can't get any money for him, really. So is it going to be something that he'd want to stay, do you think? Will he want to be here? Will he want to continue? Will he want his wages upped? Or will they be something that they're looking to get rid of?
I think he'd want to stay, you know, because if you look at his career, it's been so stop-start, hasn't it? And he at Sunderland, actually, other than maybe this season, has been the only place he's actually consistently played. So I really think he probably would want to stay, and I think we'd be stupid not to give him another 18 months at least. Mm. I mean, once, I think Gav said at the start, he was a bit wasteful at the start when he came on, but once he got into the swing of things, I mean, he's a Rolls Royce. He is just so classy on the ball. He just seems to have so much time, and he never panics. He's a joy to watch for me.
Fair enough. Gav, what do you make about the whole we've got no money situation? I know we've touched on it in the past, and it's quite a depressing subject. But obviously, January's looming now. It's very much around the corner. What are we going to do?
I've found with the Kirchhoff thing, it's hard to really, at this point, even less than a month from January, to say what's going to happen with any of the players, because we've seen with Jones, Anichebe, Denny, or even Jilabodji, we had a lot of these lads written off weeks ago, and we're talking about them now being important players, and it's hard to say what's going to happen in the weeks to come. With Kirchhoff, providing he can get through the whole of December and play a lot of football, I can't see why we wouldn't give him a new contract, but that's the big thing, isn't it? Like, him and Anichebe were given short-term contracts for a reason, because of sketchy fitness issues, albeit under different managers. Mm. And Kirchhoff had a good 45 minutes the other day, but that's not to say he's going to have another good 45 minutes next week or even get through the full game. We've just got to take the game at a time with him, I think. Mm. But talking about money and stuff, it was pretty damning that Moyes wouldn't really be drawn on what he's got to spend. When he was asked about it in the press conference by Sky, they asked him before the game, have you got much to spend in January? And he said, I hope so, but I don't know yet. And that kind of tells you everything, really. He's I'm gonna hazard that if we are out of the relegation zone with January starting, if we're in a decent position going into January, which our form would suggest we might be, the owner might be more willing to part with money for players. If we'd have been bottom of the league with 2 points still, there's absolutely no chance it would have been a Villa situation like last year, where Villa's owner had given up by January and just said, nah, I'm not doing it. And I think we've got to maybe take into consideration that Moyes is kind of playing for money here. Somebody made this suggestion on the site, actually. with that match, with the match preview. It was James. He mentioned that that Moyes is kind of at the minute with each passing game proven short. You know, I need to spend because we've got something here. We just need to add to it. And it's going to be hard for me as a fan if we're at the end of January and we haven't signed anybody to accept it if we're still within touching distance, because this club's Premier League safety and status going forward has to be paramount. It doesn't matter how much it costs, and that's why the owner owns the football club. At the end of the day, he's here to fund us. He's not here to just pass us off when the going gets tough, you know, which I don't believe he has done. But if the suggestion is that he might, then I wouldn't be accepting of that if the players are continuing to play the way they are.
It's a tricky one.
Yeah, I think that Moyes will be very loath to part with any players in January. You know, there's an issue with money. There's also an issue with wages, whether we have the money on wages. Then Kirchhoff will be on a decent whack. I don't know whether it's sort of performance based or you know, appearance based. But with Gooch and Watmore looking like they'll be out for a few months, you would assume that he might not want to get rid of someone like Kasri. I think injuries have been coming thick and fast, and obviously with Catamol still out as well, you would imagine that Kirchhoff would at least see out the season. After that point, I think it's anyone's guess as to whether he wants to stay or whether he thinks maybe he's earned a better contract elsewhere, or whether he's even in Moyes' plans and Moyes would rather reinvest those wages in, you know, the kind of signing like Undong, you know, a lot younger, you know, obviously a better injury history. It really, I think it's anyone's guess right now, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Kirchhoff leave at the end of the season at all. But I would be very surprised to see him go in January.
Well, you say about Kasri and him being loath to part, but it's not like he's getting much of a looking under Moyes, is he? He's, even when he's on the bench, not brought on. Do you think there's something going on there? What's he done? Has he upset Moyes, or does he just not like his style of play?
I think that he's an option. He's a body in the squad, and if it comes to it, he can play him, and we know he's got quality. I think, you know, there's obviously just a fundamental disagreement as to how to get the best out of him and how to, you know, how to use him in a team. Kasri has looked like he hasn't been enjoying his football this season. So whether there's a personality clash there, whether it's purely a footballing disagreement, you know, we don't know. But he's another one who, at the end of the season, I would imagine, he'd go in. If Watmore and Gooch weren't injured, I would say that if they got an offer for him, they might have sold him. But unless we get a ridiculous offer for him, which I don't think we would, I just can't see Moyes getting rid of another player from his squad. You know, it's obviously it's all speculation, but I do think that there is a personality clash there. There is a disagreement between the two that's. Ultimately, I think we'll see Kasri go, but the situation at the moment will force Moyes' hand to at least keep him around the squad, barring a ridiculous offer.
I think Callum's bang on, because I think he probably would have sold him in January had it not been for the injuries to Gooch and Watmore. I think the injury to Duncan looks really bad. Hopefully it's not going to be another 6 months or something before we see him, but it could very well be. So regardless if Kasri's on big wages, and he probably is a very sellable asset, we do need bodies. We've got cup games coming up as well. I think we'd be maybe a bit short-sighted if we were to sell him. Again, as Callum said, unless we were able to get, you know, 8 to 10 million for him, which, you know, wouldn't be overly surprising in this remarkable market. If you can't get that kind of money, I'd want to keep him around.
I think there's a serious issue at the club, and I don't want to be that person who just screams and shouts that Ellis Short has ruined our club, because history and statistical evidence suggests that he seems to have tried his best to make the club a success, but unfortunately he's hired an absolute ton of crap people around him who've ill-advised him. And we're at this point now where, with our financial fair play, which it's basically a projection of how much are you going to lose this season versus how much is your chairman investing? And basically, the more money you can make means the more money you can spend. So Sunderland's, our commercial activity, and sorry if this bores anybody, but our commercial activity is absolute garbage, unfortunately. Mm. We don't make any money anywhere. The only money we've had is from what Ellis Short has sort of thrown at the club, and he can't do that anymore because of financial fair play. He's done that too much in the past. He can't continue to do it. And alongside that, we also have the salary cap, which clubs have to abide to, which follows a similar set of rules to financial fair play, whereby the amount of money you make kind of dictates how much you can spend on wages. So for me, we're in an absolute sort of up the creek situation with regard to our finances. We really can't bring anybody in. We've got a fair amount of players on good money contracts, and Kone and Kasri are but two of those players who maybe we actually might see as expendable in January, getting rid of over £100,000 worth of wages in the January window might be sort of attractive, not only to David Moyes, but Martin Bain, especially when you consider there's going to be resale value, which is what, as we've heard from Martin Bain, is sort of where we're going to pick up on our commercial side of things, is buying players like Lamina Kone for like 5 million and then selling them on for 15, 18, whatever the figure was quoted. Same with Kasri. It's, we could sell him for a profit to the right club. So I wouldn't be surprised if those are the players that go in January. I know people are saying about Pickford, and I don't think he'll go in January for this simple reason. Jordan Pickford's not on a massive amount of money at this club. And when you sell a player, from what I can gather from reading as many articles as possible, doing research, you've got to think of a player sale almost, or a player purchase, almost like the sale of a house. Very few people whack £200,000 down on a house, or in the case of Jordan Pickford, 20 million. So it's not as if we're going to get a massive chunk of money given to us, unless the likes of Manchester United, who can throw that silly money around, come in and give us a ridiculous offer. So ultimately, if we sell Pickford, we're not going to be able to see that money in the short term. The likes of Lamina Kone and Kasri going, again, we're not going to see that money in the short term. But what's great about those sales would be that it frees up a wage bill. So now we can go out and we can sort of bring players in, maybe if it's even on loan, or maybe if we do the classic David Moyes scenario of scouring the lower leagues for bargains or whatever. But ultimately, I think Kasri and Kone, there's a very good possibility they will go in January. Pickford doesn't necessarily make financial sense, unfortunately. And I think as well, Moyes and Bain seem to have a really good idea of what's going on the financial side of things. And I mean, and Dong's a great display of that. People think 13 million, but we've said this before, it's not 13 million. We've paid something like £1 million for him so far. The rest is agreed as like a future payment plan almost. So much like you buy a house with a deposit, the deposit was about £1 million, we still owe 12. But ultimately, I think Moyes and Bain are looking for the fact that, okay, maybe he has a great season, he's only 22, maybe the likes of Arsenal, Tottenham, somebody becomes interested and offers us 20. We made £7 million from that deal. So I think ultimately that's the way you've got to try and look at our transfers. And it is tricky to try and fathom it all out, and I'm not saying I'm an expert by any means. But I think you've just got to have a long-term plan. And I mean, one player that I would throw into the ring as an option in January is somebody like Sebastian Giovinco. I don't know. I mean, I live in America, so MLS is something I'm relatively familiar with. He's been absolutely superb for Toronto, and the American season's finished now. So ultimately, he's going to be available in January. He doesn't have anything going on. He's going to be available, whether it's on a short-term loan or a purchase, whatever. But that's the kind of player we're going to be looking for. We're not going to go out and we're not going to buy players who are just going to fit straight into the first team and be absolutely superb, because you've got to pay money for that, unfortunately. We're going to have to wheel and deal and bring in bargains that make financial sense, but can also bring something to the team.
It's a shame about that when you're talking about wheeling and dealing, because I feel like we're always in much better hands when we had Allardyce doing that. He's got the gift of the gab, hasn't he? He can bring in those players and make those promises. Can Moyes?
I think if you look at Moyes' track record, and somebody feel free to jump in once I've made this last point, Moyes' track record suggests he can do that. It really, really does. If you look back at Everton, and I mean even to an extent at Man United, when you look at the other managers who've come in and haven't done as well as he did, replacing Fergie is an impossible task. But ultimately, his track record of bringing in younger players and either selling them on for a profit or making them into a crux of the team, Phil Jagielka still at the heart of that Everton defence. Leighton Baines, another really good example. He has a track record, and I don't know what the other lads think, but outside of maybe Sam Allardyce, David Moyes probably the best man to take us forward in that sense.
Yeah, you'd probably think so, Tom. Like, we were all a bit worried, weren't we, a few weeks ago? But if you look at Man United's team now, the likes of Mata and Fellaini are still getting in there, which shows that maybe David Moyes is going to bring in dependable players who, you know, well, shouldn't really let you down on a consistent basis. But on the other hand, he has brought people like Jermaine Beckford and people like that into Everton who are completely flopped. So it's going to be just as much a lottery, I think, to be honest. The transfer market is so hard to get any sort of value. We just need to have a bit of luck like we've had with Victor Nietzsche.
Well, we've got, I completely agree with both those points, to be honest. Going back to our questions, we've got Dan who asked, where does Barini fit into this? Now, I want Gav to take this one. I just want to say, though, obviously, for me, I feel like it's not well-timed when you consider the possibly very nasty injury, from all accounts, that Duncan Watmore picked up yesterday. I would think that he'd just slot right in at that position that Watmore's been playing. What do you think, Gav?
Well, I would agree, but I'm quite interested to see how far away he is from being ready, because from the indications I got from what Moyes said, it seems as though he's not far off and he's back training. Whether next weekend's game at Swansea is a stretch too far from the start of game, I'd imagine it probably is, but that would be perfect, wouldn't it, if he was fit and ready to play against a team like Swansea, because the way they're playing, if you need as many goal scorers on the pitch as possible. 9 goals they've conceded, I think, in the last 2 games, and that's just pathetic for a Premier League side. So if we can get people on the pitch next week who are capable of scoring goals, then I think we're very capable of winning that match. And when you look at the players who we'll have other than Barini, Januzaj and Kasri, I think it's quite clear Kasri and Moyes aren't on the same wavelength, at least. I don't think he rates him enough to be starting him regularly, because he only played him when he had to. And then Januzaj is, well, how do I put it? I think Moyes has a lot of faith in Januzaj, but I don't think he's done enough to warrant starts after coming back from injury, going off the back of his performances before he got injured, which means, of course, Moyes has a decision to make, doesn't he? He's either got to pick the lad who he doesn't rate but is fit and the fans quite like, or he's got to pick his player who, before he got injured, was largely poor. And in this system, which we've came across, he hasn't played in this 4-3-3 with a Nietzsche on one side. He would be expected to do all the work Watmore does off the ball, which is a tremendous amount. And I think it would probably guarantee that Kasri would do a better job of it than Januzaj. So short term, we have an issue. We have to try and work out who's going to replace Duncan Watmore next week. I really do hope it's Fabio Barini, but I think once it looks as though Watmore's going to be out a while. It looks like Gucci's out a while, which means that once Barini's fit, he's pretty much guaranteed to be starting, and it can't come soon enough for me. I really don't think that we can afford, with players back fit, to have players like Barini not starting games. He's not class by any stretch, but he's a more dependable forward, and I think he would really be a good player in this system, because the system we're trying to employ requires the wide players to do a lot of graft off the ball, and also weighing with the goals and the assists. And Barini, for me, has shown, at least while he's been here, that he's got all of those capabilities. It's just a case of keeping them fit and then maybe getting the players around him who can do the dirt work as well. So, yeah, for me, he starts as soon as he's fit. If that's next weekend, then great.
Well,
yeah, I think that next weekend, I'm not a fan of Januzaj. I'm a fan of Kasri, but I'm realistic in the sense that I know that David Moyes doesn't particularly seem to trust him or like him in his team. So I'd probably rather have Larsson maybe trying to give that role, you know, trying to do that role in the opening sort of half and see how he gets on. trying to sort of, you know, come in from the wide areas and maybe be a bit busy and put himself about, because Watmore likes to get stuck in and have a, you know, get stuck into challenges. And Yanezai, I can't even think of a less combative player than Yanezai. So I don't think Kasri gets himself stuck in challenges either, by any stretch of the imagination. So Larsen might give you that bit of intensity that Watmore, you know, he's not going to be as quick as Watmore or as busy, but he might still have that bite that Watmore has. But I agree with Gav completely in terms of when Berrini's fit, he has to go back in. I'm a massive Fabio Berrini fan. I think he's got a lot more quality than people give him credit for. He's got a lot of work ethic. I think he is, he genuinely gets what it means to play for Sunderland. And he's got that kind of drive about him where he can get the ball and he can push you forward and he can G up the crowd and he can deliver in the big games and score goals. And he's not a 20 goal a season striker. He's not Jermaine Defoe, but he will work and run and chase, and he'll back that up with quality when it really matters. Mm-hmm. And he'll give the crowd a boost, and he really gets the crowd on side as well. And you know, I've got so much time for Fabio Berrini. So when he's fit, he has to go back in the team for me, and to make that position his own. That's definitely. Fair.
I think spot on, Colin. Like, I think that you've hit the nail on the head with saying he scores big goals. He does. I mean, if you think back to his loan spell here as well, I mean, Fabio Berrini, he just scores important goals, doesn't he? And when it comes down to it, and you're in a, hopefully we won't be in any more relegation six pointers later on in the season, but if we are, Fabio Berrini's the kind of man you want there who might nick you a goal. Not just that, but he's quite a wily player. He's very intelligent and he's got a lot of experience. So, you know, where Duncan Watmore kind of puts his head down and will just run, Berrini may look to win some cheeky free kicks and might to, you know, gain you ground in other ways, which will probably be very, very important for the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. That's something I really admire about Fabio Berrini. I'm a massive Berrini fan as well. We brought up Swansea. I suppose that's something that we should discuss. Yeah, 9 goals conceded in 2 games. That's true. I think it's fair to say that whatever Bob Bradley's plan was, it doesn't seem to really be working out for the team. What do we think about that then? I mean, I'm not really going to ask for predictions because anything can happen. And to be fair, it was a dodgy game. Like, obviously, not yesterday. That was very dodgy. That was pretty bad for them. But the week before as well, the way that game between them and, was it Palace they were playing? It was like 4-3 at the end or 5-4. Do you know what I mean?
5-4.
That is mental. So it's fair to say that they're leaking goals without a doubt. I don't know whether it's their defenders, I don't know whether it's just their general plan or their tactics. But what do we expect from them? I mean, imagine if we start that game the same way we started yesterday. Imagine what we could do to a team like that. Do you think they'll have like a extra onus on them to defend because it's us? Do you know what I mean? Like, can't lose to Sunderland, as so many people have that idea that people don't they have they don't like it, do they? Then we're not exactly what I thought.
I think that's a change in opinion now. Surely it has to be. People are going to look at us and think. I guess what they think straight away now is how we're going to deal with Victor and Ichi, isn't it? Really, and I think realistically, if we want to get a positive result, which we're more than capable of getting, and we need, in all honesty, I think the key to it's going to be to put Swansea under the cosh from the beginning, like we did against Leicester, unsettle them. I think at Swansea as well, the crowd are going to be very susceptible to being under that pressure. They're going to turn very quickly. I think the whole situation with their owners. Getting rid of Guidolin and bringing in, I want to say Brad Bobley off the soccer
I knew you were
sketches. I really want to, and I'm like, what's his name? But I really do think that they're going to be very susceptible. They're trying their best to come up, to really embrace Bradley's what he's trying to do with the team. But in America, you know, obviously because he's American, there's a lot of coverage on Swansea at the minute. And a lot of people are just, they're unsure why he's there. He hasn't really done much recently. And I think Swansea are in for a real period of struggle. The change of ownership came at an awful time. The change of manager came at an even worse time. And we really need to exploit that. I think if we can keep Gylfi Sigurdsson quiet and we can preoccupy their defence with Victor Anichebe, we have every chance of coming away from the Liberty Stadium with 3 points.
Can you imagine though being Kyle Naughton watching Anichebe against Simpson this weekend? He must be absolutely crapping himself. I've watched them a fair bit this season, Swansea, and it's quite clear where the problems lie. That they're really missing Ashley Williams. He wasn't the greatest defender in the world, technically, but as a solid centre half, I don't think they get much better than Ashley Williams in the mid table. And he's gone now, and they've tried to replace him with two centre defenders who, one's a championship youngster, Alfie Mawson, the guy who we were in with, and he actually chose Swansea over us. And then I think is it De Horn? Or I can't remember.
Van De Horn.
Van De Horn, yeah.
He is
poor. I've not been impressed whenever I watched him. And I think Sunderland now have to just look at their issues. I've said this before. Sunderland too often worry about what the other team are going to do to us. Where the form side going into this game, they're going to be worried about us. They're going to be worried about Victor Anichebe. They're going to be worried about the fact that Defoe needs very few chances to put the ball away, and there'll be the memories of Defoe scoring a hat-trick on their turf last season will be fresh in the memory. I think we really have to turn up and just go at them, because their crowd, like Tom says, their crowd are going to hate it if they aren't on the front foot. And we've already shown this weekend against a better team than Swansea that we can do it. So there's no reason why we can't go there and take the game to them. But I would really like to see, us go out and just go for it. Because if we don't, then we're going to start panicking, and it's going to really set us back. Because at half time, if we're not 1-0 up, then we have to start thinking of a plan B. Because these are the poorer team. So I'm quite optimistic, though. I'm not going to worry too much about Swansea. I don't think, other than Sigurdsson, they've got anything, really.
No, injured, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I think they've conceded 17 goals in the last 5 games. I mean, if that does... If Domain Defoe and Victor Anichebe should be rubbing their hands at that. And you got to say, if they come out the blocks the same way they did on Saturday, you know, pedal to the metal, get in their faces, quiet the crowd down, there is absolutely no chance that we won't win. There really isn't. We look a really decent team going forward. If we can keep it tight, I have full confidence in the lads that they can get 3 points.
I mean, we said, like, I said at the beginning of the season that Ashley Williams, when they sold Ashley Williams and Andre Ayew, I think within a space of a week of each other, I said they're going to have to buy incredibly well to stave off relegation this season, because that's their main goal scorer from last season and the main foundation of the reason that they were able to win the games that they did win, because they were winning sort of 2-1 or 1-0 because Ashley Williams was that, you know, that leader at the back who helped them keep the clean sheets. Now he's gone and they are wide open at the back. I struggle to remember a time when I've seen a team so disorganized and rudderless at just in general. I mean, Tottenham were just enjoying themselves, just taking them apart. I mean, they've got players like Jordi Amat, and, you know, Gav mentioned the other two centre backs as well, who are very average players, and Kyle Naughton as well. I've never rated him as a fullback. I've always thought he was a bit of a fraud, to be honest. So him up against Victor Anichebe is like you said. It might be difficult to watch even for us. I mean, it might actually be quite cruel. Watch it at certain
I'll
points.
Take that. That's
so
fine.
I think Leroy Fair, Gylfi Sigurdsson are definitely their main attacking threats. They've got Fernando Llorente, who's best years behind him, but he's still a bit of a threat from, you know, in the air, and they've got that Borja Baston, who I admittedly haven't seen a lot of, and he cost them a lot of money. Bob Bradley doesn't seem to fancy playing him too much, and they just look aging. They look like they don't know what they want to do, how they want to play. Their passing style's gone. Are they going to
launch it long up to Llorente? Are they going to, you know, play intricately? Do they have the players for possession play anymore? There's all these questions, and they're trying to find out who we are, much like we were a month ago, only now we've got the momentum. Now we've got a bit of an identity coming through. We've got players in form. And if we come away from that game without 3 points, it's an opportunity missed because they look awful.
Put it this way, lads. Put it this way. This is how important Victor and each of you. I don't know if anybody has noticed, but every time Airport gets added into a tweet, a Twitter poll, it wins. Like, it doesn't matter what the subject matter is. Yes. It could be like, yeah, if someone offered you £100 million or an Airport, what would you take? Airport would win, but nah.
Yeah.
We've polled people on Twitter. 70% would rather have Victor and each of you than an Airport.
You say that, right? It seems to me like all of our optimism and all of our plans for the near future just revolve around Big Vic, don't they? So all I need to hear now is for he's come down the stomach bug or something like that, or he's stubbed his toe and broken 3 toes or some crap like that.
He has a question, and he's obviously very important to us, and the way he plays is vital really now to how we go out in games. So would anybody expect us to go out in January and try and sign somebody else just like him? Or at least another big bulky forward.
Yeah, 100%.
Go for that anyway. That's something that I think every team should have. They should have an abundance of powerful, just like forwards. Do you know what I mean? People who can't be easily shoved off the ball and people who can hold the ball up. So I'd say, yeah, definitely.
Well, what's Tommy and Tommy doing?
Yeah. Tom mentioned the MLS off-season. What's Big Josie doing over the pond?
Don't even joke, Callum. No.
Josie and Giovinco. Back for the winter. Oh,
that'll be alright, wouldn't it?
I'm just looking at the free transfer list, and Adebayor's still going spare. Like,
no,
we could maybe try and hypnotise him and tell him he's Victor and Ichibi and see if that works. Like,
Peter Crouch, I think genuinely would be a decent option because he doesn't get a game at Stoke, and if you're looking at if Victor and Ichibi picks up an injury, who are we going to be able to afford to bring in who fills that mold?
He's got legs like rubber band. Do you know what I mean?
But he's played with Defoe before. He's not going to cost a lot. For 6 months on loan, I think we could do a lot worse.
Do you not reckon, like, in the past, because we've had big issues getting Crouchier in the past, like, loads of times. I remember one transfer window that they had him actually in Newcastle Airport coming to meet with a club, and it never came off, and it's probably happened 3 or 4 times. Sunderland have been in from these, turn us down every time. But you've got to think, at his age and the stage of his career, the chance to maybe link up with Defoe again, seeing what Defoe's done at Sunderland, say, you know, a player that was written off and wasn't playing in a competitive league. I'm sorry, but the MLS isn't what I would class as a competitive league. You've got to think, would he look at maybe something like that and think, I could go to Sunderland and really have a good, you know, end of my career here? And I think Sunderland would probably take him. I think Moyes would love a player like that. He loves an old, experienced bargain, like, so I don't think he would be adverse to it.
Right, yeah, well, that's it for today, or for this week. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget, you can subscribe on Acast. You can get us on iTunes as well. If you want to get a question on the pod, don't worry, hit us up on the Twitter account. We always ask. Yeah, it's been a good time, and hopefully we'll have some more fantastic Get the Rave On news for you next week. So thanks to you lads for joining me. And yeah, this is Roker Report signing off.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.